This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Monday the 15th of January. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Lara Dickinson. We're back for 2018, and on tonight's show, we'll be heading to the Better Together conference that was held on the weekend to ask the question, how can the gay and lesbian communities be better allies to the bi, intersex, and trans communities? Then we head to Midsummer Carnival as they explore a new step towards inclusivity with an interactive art installation for blind and visually impaired people. And we speak to the winner of Mr. Gay Pride, Jordan Bruno from Western Australia, and find out how he plans to build stronger pathways for young LGBTI people all around Australia.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au, or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Last week, over 600 delegates from Australia and overseas attended the first Better Together conference, exploring issues facing the LGBTI movement, bringing together diverse voices from across our communities, and discussing what it would mean to work better together and how we could achieve this. What would a more inclusive LGBTI conversation look like? One of the big themes that was talked about in the conference was that the lesbian and gay communities need to do more work to become better allies to the bisexual, transgender, and intersex communities. But how could they do that? Ian Muchamore spoke to trans advocate Sally Tia Conning, president of Organisation Intersex International Australia, Morgan Carpenter, and queer artist and advocate for Bi Voices, Danny Weber, at the conference, and asked how the LNG communities can better support the ITBs.
The community has still got a divide in it. There's the lesbians and the gays, and I quite often use the acronym slightly differently. I say LGBIT. Lesbians, gays, and don't forget the other bit. And I think we are becoming more accepted, but we are still not on the fringe, but we're still getting there as being part of the five main letters of the acronym. I've had people actually look at me today, and I'm thinking, I'm part of the community. Why are you looking at me? And I think, I know why you're here, because you need to be, because you've still got so much to understand and learn. That trans people are part of the community, gender diverse people are part of the community, bi, intersex, we're all part of a community. It's not just about the lesbians, it's not just about the gays, it's about the lot of us together.
One of the biggest things is not assuming people's gender and sexuality. Mm-hmm. The same way lesbians and gays don't want to be assumed as heterosexual, just meeting someone, using neutral pronouns and not assuming who they might be attracted to, even if they are at an LGBT+ conference, there can be such a default to homosexuality in these spaces and monosexuality. So actually having an open mind about the huge variety there is in the rainbow community is really important.
Well, I think we do have to work together, and I think that there are many advantages in doing that. But it's also true to say that there have been many failings in working together as well. A lot of that comes from different assumptions that people have about what it means to be a member of those populations. Like for an intersex population, we are an incredibly diverse population with at least 40 different intersex variations. Most of which are genetic. What we share in common is this experience of being born with sex characteristics that differ from medical norms for female or male bodies. So we can be hugely diverse. And we're often pigeonholed as some issue about sexual orientation or about gender identity. And those kind of categories and categorizations have not met our needs.
I think that marriage equality the other last year, now, it was mainly for L and G. The trans community, the gay and the bi, the lesbians and all the rest of us, we all stood there and fought with you. I think a lot of the lesbian and gay people are going to sit back now and say, we got what we want, and it's going to be left up to us to fight for what we want. The lesbian and gays need to get out of their comfy chairs and stand up and fight with us now, and that would be a great step for the total inclusion of LGBTI as a group.
Now, there are many other things that LGBT people can do, okay? I mean, and one of them is to question the lack of resources for intersex organising. Question a lack of resourcing for parents and children with intersex variations. And the lack of visibility of them and their needs in health support services for what are supposed to be LGBTI populations.
As for organisations, the most important thing is having a diverse membership and diverse leadership. So on actual boards and committees, not just having L and G people who are sympathetic to different other groups, but having people from those groups in the organising and in the leadership. And that way they can represent themselves and represent themselves in the communities as well and make sure those needs are met. I don't know every organisation, but I know historically things have been very monosexual focused, so in my experience, there does need to be more diversity, but different organisations are stronger at that than others.
But there are some challenges that arise when particularly LGBT organisations celebrate the work of doctors from hospitals for their work with trans kids, when those same hospitals are engaged in human rights violations against intersex infants, children and adolescents. This is still a massive issue, yeah. Come and talk with us. Come and find out what we need. But also talk to the organisations that are led by endosex, cisgender, lesbians and gay men. And challenge the work that they're doing and make sure that they are meeting the needs of people with intersex variations and our families, as well as the needs of trans people as well, who are also underrepresented in many of those institutions. And by endosex, what I mean is non-intersex. Yeah.
Lesbian gays, I think, need to put their arms out and welcome us and say, hey, guys. And I use guys as a collective in that case. This case. But I like to clarify, because I know a lot of people get hooty if you, especially in the gender diverse community, if you use the wrong sounding names to the wrong sounding pronouns and people, blah, blah, they still need to say, hey, you are welcome. Stop using, this is a lesbian and gay environment. It's an LGBTI environment. When they use, this is a gay, lesbian Mardi Gras. No, it's an LGBTI Mardi Gras, because we're all supposed to be in it. It's just little inclusive things like that, I think, is the key. If we're sounding like we're in it, we are in it. When they say it's the gay, lesbian Mardi Gras, I've got no intention of going. They need to say it is the LGBTI Mardi Gras or the rainbow community Mardi Gras. They've got to talk the talk and put us in the language first. It must not just say lesbian and gay this, lesbian, gay that. It's got to say lesbian, gay, trans, bi, intersex, and the rest of the bloody wheelbarrow that we are now in the alphabet. There's P++++, as I heard them say here yesterday. I'm going, what the? I couldn't tell you what the +++ are. But I'm sure you, in a couple of years' time, you could be asking one of those +++ the same question you're asking me today. How do we go about being inclusive to you? It starts by the talk, the language, then the actions to follow it up.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Yesterday saw Melbourne's Midsummer Festival kick off with the annual and much-anticipated Midsummer Carnival in Alexandra Gardens. In a new step toward inclusivity, Midsummer have created a safe and interactive space for blind and vision-impaired people attending the carnival. Daniel Roberts and Dean Arcuri spoke to the key players involved in this, and Daniel filed this report.
Yesterday, I arrived at Midsummer Carnival pretty late in the day. It was exciting, but when you've stumbled in after having a reasonably quiet day, walking into a crowd of thousands can be a sensory overload. The music is pumping and people are partying, it's a lot. But imagine if you were vision impaired or blind. It could be overwhelming. This is an issue that was raised by Ross Devent, who is blind and queer, and Wilma Crosty, both from Description Victoria, in the lead up to this year's Midsummer Carnival. Along with Daniel Santangeli, Midsummer's program director, they started a conversation that led to an art installation considered a game changer for blind and vision impaired festival attendees. I spoke to Wilma Crosty from Description Victoria. I started out by asking him about the artwork and its origins.
My colleague Ross Devent, who is blind and queer, and me and Daniel from Midsummer were all talking about Ross's previous experiences of carnival. And as you can imagine, most people who listen to Joy have probably been before. It's a pretty loud day, quite crowded, can be kind of an overwhelming experience, especially if you happen to also be blind as well, and it can be a little bit alienating. So in talking to Dan, we realised that there was a really great opportunity to try and come up with a way around that and offer people a more comfortable experience at carnival. Dan Santangeli, the program manager at Midsummer, is obviously someone with a great arts nous and great connections to the world. And he came back to us with this idea of working with the Slow Art Collective on an installation that would be primarily tactile and would be kind of a home base within Carnival for people who are blind or have low vision who would like to attend the event.
Will from Description Victoria goes on to mention that the artwork has been extensively tested by both their organisation and blind and vision impaired members of the community, including Ross Devent, who was down at Carnival yesterday manning the installation. Dean Arcuri had a chat to Ross while people were interacting with the work.
So it's to help people, because we had a discussion about the fact that when blind people meet people from the general public, they tend to just talk about their blindness or their guide dog, and we're wondering how to bring people into an experience and to have us talk about other things rather than just the blindness or the guide dog. So that's how this came about. So we've got these sculptures where you can touch them and they make noises. You can hear the noises in the background. And also we've got a weaving part where we had a workshop yesterday and we learned how to do the weaving, and then today we can speak to the general public and get them to do some weaving with us and create an art project and to have a chat about disability at the same time.
How important is it to not only have that chat, but to also have something like this in the space that creates a way to connect pathways for everyone in regard to disability?
It's really important, because we wanted to make a way of not only the general public, but us as the blind people ourselves feel comfortable in the space, and we needed to have something to be able to do that.
Dylan Martorell from the Slow Art Collective is one of the artists behind the interactive work. After spending many hours designing, testing and installing the piece prior to Carnival, he was able to assist and view people interacting with the installation. Dylan says the work will appeal to everyone, but working with a specific focus group has made the work especially exciting.
So how long have you been bumping everything in?
We started bumping in on Wednesday and we had most of it finished by Thursday night, and then the last few days I've just been doing electronics and, yeah, bits and pieces.
What do you think the importance of having this kind of work and this kind of interactiveness for people who can see and those who have visual disabilities or are blind are to help?
Well, I mean, the work is for everyone. It works on so many different sensory levels that... Yeah, it appeals to everyone, but working with that focus group has been especially exciting because we've had to think about the installation in a different way, and by thinking about it in a different way, it's actually made it a lot better. So we've had to think about it working on a level for people without sight, and we've also had to think about it in an outdoor environment, so we've got sunshades, yeah, various different elements, and we've had to think about the tactile nature of things a lot more as well. So not just what you see, but also what you feel.
Were there challenges that came with that when you started looking at how you needed to explore and expand on things?
I wouldn't say challenges. I'd say it was like, yeah, it was just like an exciting angle to take. One of the few challenges that we did have was that we had to make a space that could be entered very easily. Usually the structures are a bit lower, so this time we've made it a bit higher, so it's easy to walk through without bumping into things.
While the infamous dog show is one of Midsummer Carnival's highlights, how exciting are festivals really for our four-legged friends? The special thing about this installation at Carnival is that seeing eye dogs can interact with the work as well as humans. It's an amazing feature, described here by Description Victoria's Will McCrosty.
Dylan from Slow Art is a bit of a genius, and he's come up with a way to rig ice and water with cues for sounds. So there'll be installations within the structure that react to touch, and so people and dogs who touch these installations will be triggering sounds and all sorts of interesting things that are going to happen throughout the installation as well.
Yeah, the bit that I wanted to work was that we wanted to create an area for the seeing eye dogs for them to rest and to be able to drink water. And so I thought a great element would be if the water that they drank was triggering sounds, and it works. Yeah, that was so good to see.
Seeing that interacting in that
Seeing
way.
The interaction, yeah, the dog triggering the temple bell was great.
Midsummer Festival is all about igniting a conversation through art. And this is just another initiative the festival has undertaken to keep that conversation going and to be a more inclusive environment for all members of our community. So, now that Carnival is over, what else is being done to make sure vision impaired and blind people are considered when programming for an arts festival?
The installation itself is being built specifically for Carnival, but Flow Art do very similar things like this. Description Victoria is working with Midsummer to provide a range of described experiences throughout the festival. So you can have a look on descriptionvictoria.com.au, and we've got an audio guide up. We're doing a show called Riot at the Arts Centre. We're doing a tactile tour of an exhibition called We Are Here, a tactile tour of Homophonic, which is a classical music concert. So, yeah, the installation itself will just be for Carnival, but we're going to be exploring a whole range of experiences for people who are blind throughout the festival.
That was Will McCrosty from Description Victoria there, rounding off that report.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Mr. Gay Pride Australia is a search for Aussies who best represent and support their community. The competition is designed to find, build and develop future leaders within the LGBTI community in Australia and around the world. Mr. Gay Pride Australia selects the official Australian representative for Mr. Gay World, who will this year be competing in South Africa for the competition's 10th year. After a public campaign and a weekend of activities, Jordan Bruno from Western Australia was announced as Mr. Gay Pride at the Midsummer Carnival. The Informer spoke to him today about what this title means to him and how he wants to use his platform to provide greater support for young LGBTI people from around the country.
So the winner of Mr. Gay Pride Australia 2018 is Jordan Bruno.
I'm a little overwhelmed. It's a bit of an honour. I want to thank everyone for coming out today and being a part of this amazing community. It's a real honor to represent this community and be a part of it. Honestly, I've had so much support and there's so much inspiration here. Everywhere you look, there's inspirational people that have done so much. And I hope that I can leave a fraction of the legacy that you guys have. Yeah. I'm overwhelmed and I promise I'm going to use this to do some good things. I'm not any more special than anyone else. We can do this as a community. We have a long way to go for equality and we've achieved a lot in the last year. But I've got my eyes on complete equality and we won't stop until we get there. Thank you.
I went onto My Kitchen Rules with the intention to kind of be an advocate for LGBTI people and be visible. And I just didn't expect to get the response I've got. And I just didn't realise how many people were actually quite in need. And as you meet the individuals and you hear the personal stories, they kind of inspire you. And it made me want to do what I do on a bigger level. And I thought this would be the platform to make that happen. I run a cooking school in Western Australia that connects transsexual kids with each other, bisexual. Pretty much I've got this cooking class and they connect the kids and they're 12 kids in a class because they can't afford a bigger place. And then what I've discovered is essentially when they meet each other, they build these support networks and they talk about what they've gone through and they build friendships based on who they are and what they've experienced and what they're going through, and they become really tight really quick, and these friendships turn into something really significant in their life, and they've maintained it since we started the cooking classes. So some of them 6 months ago, but they talk every day in the group chat still, which is amazing. So it's just creating support networks, but more of them and across Australia, because you've got amazing charities here in Melbourne like Minus 18 doing incredible things for kids, but in rural Australia, there's very little representation. Western Australia, we don't have much, even Start Out. I was just talking to him, and their charity doesn't really go outside of Sydney and Melbourne. Adelaide, Northern Territory, Queensland's a bit better, but it misses out, and Tasmania is probably the worst. So I guess it's just trying to find all the amazing work that's happened in Melbourne and Sydney, and then I'm trying to spread it across the whole of Australia so that these kids realise that they have the support. And I think when they have a friendship, and they have friends that are going through the same thing as them, they'll be less inclined to suffer with anxiety, depression, or anything else that might be going on in their lives. They'll have someone they can lean on, which is important. I already wrote the list the other day about all the work that I want to do. First thing first, I want to bring Start Out to Western Australia, grow my cooking school and get sponsorships so I can have up to 45 kids in a class. And then I also want to start a string of videos this week on, say, a cultural inclusion in the gay community, body and self-image issues in the gay community, real positive issues that are becoming almost an epidemic in the LGBTI community, and so many people are suffering and we don't really talk about it. More on HIV and releasing these trip videos across Icon, DNA Magazine, Same Same, my platforms and more. And being a voice for those gay communities that people feel insecure about, so they don't want to go on a gay holiday because they don't want to take their shirt off. I want them to be a voice and see how many people feel that way and how they don't have to be obsessed with body image and comparing bodies to each other. And not everyone in the gay community is so vain and stereotypical. We're a whole range of people and some stand out more than others. And obviously gay culture permits a certain way of aesthetics, but we can kind of deny those and embrace who we are individually, which is kind of our campaign as a community anyway, is all about embracing who we are. But when it comes to being within the community, I think we forget that a little bit. My platform's in Western Australia. A majority of my following is in WA. But I guess I also want to reach South Australia, Tasmania, and go Australia-wide with this and see where the demand for mental health work is required. And then we can kind of reach out to those areas because we know, okay, cool, no one in Adelaide is being supported by this, so we need to go there. Or there's no one in Kununurra that's supporting this cause, so we need to go find some mentors there that can run some community work and then individually set it up where we're missing. Melbourne and Sydney, obviously, they've got the highest population in kids, and I'm sure there's a lot more work to be done here, but I really want to spread the amazing work that everyone's done here, because there are some inspirational people here doing incredible things across Australia. This was like kind of acknowledgement that the work that I was doing was good, because you kind of doubt yourself with everything that you're doing. You know, are you making a real impact? Are people really seeing this? Everyone there kind of knew the work I was doing, which was overwhelming. So I guess it's just acknowledgement that you're on the right path, you're doing the right thing, and people are seeing it as an achievement and acknowledging it, which means a lot. So, yeah, it was really overwhelming. I'm very grateful. And, I mean, to me, the guys that were there, anyone that would have won really did deserve the title there.
they've got their heart in the right place and they're doing incredible things.
And John, we'll get you to ask the first question for yourself to Jordan Bruno from Western Australia.
Well, Jordan doesn't like talking very much. Jordan, I'm really keen to know, obviously you've done a lot of advocacy work and we all know that, but going through this process, what's been the best part of it for you? And also, has it changed your perception of the issues that face the community at all?
Yeah, thanks, John. I guess hugely it has. The best part, part one of the question, is meeting these guys and the amazing work they're doing. And I guess what it's brought to my attention is that all seven of us are here, but we're all fighting for a different social cause. So it gives you an idea of how much work there is left to do in this community, whether it's in the Army, the Defence Force, it's regional Australia, it's trans kids in school, mental health issues. We're all here fighting for something different. And I think we're all representing the issues and how far we have to go. It's in a bit of an honour to be a part of it.
And the second part that I want to know is what's changed for you throughout this? Because obviously you already had ideals and passions, but has your perception about any of these issues changed since meeting these other fellows?
Yeah, I guess so, hugely. I guess I was a little bit, I've got my own social concerns. I'm a huge advocate for mental health with kids, and I run my LGBTI cooking school, and I published a book with all the funds going to mental health charities. I didn't quite realise how much other industries kind of needing a support and help, and they've brought it to my attention. So I'm very grateful. The amount of work needed is far more widespread than I realised.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you the news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip that you would like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer.joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Lara Dickinson.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.